This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Today I'll take you to Beijing to check out the amazing new architecture there, and we'll also go out into rural China in search of the true home of Kung Fu. But first, Ry Cooder. You probably know his name for producing the amazing mega-hit record of Cuban music, Buena Vista Social Club. But Cooder's musical resume also includes gigs with Johnny Cash, the Rolling Stones, and Warren Zevon, and solo records that were among the favorites of my youth. These days, Cooder is going solo again, and he's been working on an American epic about life in California after World War II. I'm recording again, and you know why. The third installment of that epic is out now, and it's called I Flathead.
We have a story here about this fella Cash Buck, who works at the Farmer John Meatpacking Company in Vernon during the day, and then at night sometimes he's a guitar player in a little bar, and he has some friends and an ex-wife and a dog.
And the CD also comes with a novella by Cooder in which he expands on his hero story.
I just wrote it all down as a history story, rather as a, an oral history. Like I had been talking to these folks and had gone around and met them and so forth, you know.
The characters aren't real, but the setting certainly is. Cash belongs to a community of auto nuts who hot-rotted around the California deserts in the 1950s and 60s.
Here in L.A., they started building what they call speed equipment for these flathead motors. There was millions of them. You could go get one for $25, make your own parts or buy them down at the speed shop maybe for $5-$10, and go another 50 miles an hour faster, take it out to the desert and run this thing and not run into anybody. You know, it's just flat, dry lake.
And it was kind of the great American age of tinkering, right?
I mean, exactly. Tinkering is the key to this. I mean, it's a do-it-yourself culture, which I think is great. Guys who do it their way, you know, they make their car, they fix the plumbing in the house. You know, if the little woman wants a washing machine, they go out and they get a junk one and fix it till it works. It's a culture. It's an idea.
Yeah.
And a guy like Paul Bigsby, who was a genius, who learned metal casting during the war at Lockheed and ended up designing and building these incredible pedal steel guitars out of aircraft aluminum.
Wow, I didn't know that. You can't make that stuff up.
You really can't. That's another point I like here because, you know, these are unremarkable people to meet or talk to, you might say, by modern standards, dull.
Right.
Except after you know them for a little while, you begin to find out, you know, behind every door there's a crazy thing going on.
Let's listen to a little bit of the song from this record, Flathead, one more time.
3 o'clock this morning, I woke up in a dream. Thought I heard a flathead motor roar. I thought I smelled gasoline. A feeling came upon me that I ain't had in years. Something like a hot, dry wind whistling past my ears. Saying, time, time, time is all you got. There's a memory that's still burning way down in my mind. And that's why I'm going out and trying a flathead one more time.
This record and the last one, My Name is Buddy, both come as these special edition CDs packaged with the novellas that out of which the music comes, written by you. How did you decide to start doing that, sort of writing this whole kind of world, creating this literary universe out of which the music comes?
Yeah, because I thought to get the story out is the key to this whole thing. A four-minute song is very nice. Of course, we love it. But like Buddy would say, that's not the whole story. You know, the tune is pleasant and interesting and contemplative sometimes. Mm-hmm. But Buddy wanted you to know that life is hard, you know, that things weren't as rosy as all that. And so he tried to tell you in his simple cat way what really had gone on.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd better describe the entire way of life as best I could. And then you might take a little trip, you know, and you might say, let's go see these folks. I don't know anybody like this. Or maybe you do.
Yeah.
But if you don't, then it's just another one of these little armchair journeys, you know. I like things that I don't know anything about. I can't understand why people want to see themselves on TV.
Yes.
That's appalling to me. I want to know about people I don't know about.
Yeah. So has this been gratifying to you to have this larger canvas on which to do your make up your stories and do your thing?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah?
It's tremendous. You know, I've always listened to people talking, and remembering conversations was something I could always do, you know, in music too, in lyrics. And the first time I ever heard Hey Porter when I was 8, I remembered every word. Then I went to school the next day, 4th grade, and the teacher says, "Why are you staring out the window?" I was making sure I didn't lose track of the second verse and the third verse and what he says to the porter each time. So I got in trouble with the teacher. But yes, I love to do this. I'm going to keep doing this. This is fun. You know, people like stories. I think we're all kind of hardwired for them.
Speaking of Hey Porter, there's a song on the record called Johnny Cash. Let's listen to that and talk about it. That is from Reichhuder's new record, I Flathead, and even a musical idiot like me can see that that's a Johnny Cash homage. Was Johnny Cash a huge influence on you from age 9? Yeah,
it was Hey Porter, I Walked the Line. The rhythm of it and the guitar part, you know, Luther playing these single note rhythm lines. It got me so hard that I never stopped thinking about it. And of course, they're visual songs, you know. Big River and going to Folsom Prison, and you see them. I mean, you can see them in your head very easily. And when I was a kid, that meant a lot, you know. And once I had that picture up there, it never went away. And so I spent a lot of years, boom, chick, mm-hmm. playing that stuff and mm-hmm. liking to play it and even wanting to make up my own version on the guitar, which I did, to the extent that my son Joaquin, who's 29 years old now, is playing drums on this record, and he can play this stuff because he grew up, I suppose, from infancy, picking up on here's me in the corner, boom, chick, boom, chick, you know, decade in, decade out.
Did you raise Joaquin to sort of, from the cradle, to create a piece of your backup band?
Well, one time Steve Earle, after we did a little record session, in fact, with Johnny, and Joaquin played on it, and Steve Earle says, "Well, hey, grow yourself a hothouse drummer. Yourself a hydroponic." But that's not how it went. I mean, you have to be called. You should be called to your instruments.
Mm-hmm.
But Jim Keltner, the great drummer, would come to be in the house, and he'd leave a drum set up, and we'd work in the afternoon and play, the two of us, you know. And Joaquin would, he was 4 or 5 years old, look around the corner and watch. I think he saw how much fun it was, and he saw that the rapport that we had.
So he was a bit of a prodigy.
You can't insist on any such thing. It's not part of the program.
Right.
It's just happened that way. To answer your question.
What about your own childhood, apart from listening to people like Johnny Cash on the radio? How did it prepare you for what you do now?
I knew some guitar at that point. I had one, and I could play it a little. And it's simple music, three-chord music, honky-tonk, right? And I'd sit there and play it with the radio, you know. And at one point, I heard this Ray Price tune called My Shoes Keep Walking Back to You.
I may say that I don't care. Hold my head.
It tells about a guy whose arms do this, and his lips do this, and his eyes do this, and his shoes keep walking. He has no control over his body at all. That's how obsessed he is. I thought, yes, that's the song, that's the guy, that's the band. I'm going to do that. My dad says, "Oh, you don't want to do that." Why? I said, "Well, those are a bunch of hillbillies, a bunch of rednecks." My dad liked classical music, which I like too. Well, I thought, okay, fine. But I kept thinking about this and wanting to do this, and of course I never did. Then you think, what can I do? You know, when you're born in Santa Monica, there's nothing there. But there is, it turns out there was something in Los Angeles, which was the recording business. And all of these great honky-tonk players, as well as jazz musicians and gospel singers, and everybody had drifted out or moved or migrated out to L.A. because the recording industry was here, because the technology was here. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It was a town of technology, especially after the war. You could have this confluence, and you could have the record industry and Capitol Records with the studios. And they said, man, there's a 200,000-300,000 of these hillbillies out here now. Let's make their music the way they like it. And it was good. It was high-powered and jet-propelled. And gradually, the scene changed, as it always will, because of tastes and times, and folk rock appeared on the scene in the 60s while I was in high school.
Yeah.
You know, and then that was something I could do. I mean, I could play mandolins and guitar, and I had learned by that time to play rhythmically and emphatically like you're supposed to do. And I started to work. I was in high school, started to get work. And then the teachers got on my case again, because come to high school and sit in a classroom after going to a record session, are you kidding? So why are you staring out the window? I says, I can't explain it. So I got bad grades, you know. My fate was sealed, so to speak, see, because there was this thing you could participate in, which for me was the most
right.
miraculous thing I'd ever seen,
right.
and that being a record studio.
It's like you were very lucky, as it turned out, both in geography and timing, right?
It's precisely right, and the luck of it, you can't even quantify. How can I tell you? Mike Nichols once said to me, 50% luck, and I'd say that's right. If I'd have been, let's say, living 50 miles away, 100 miles away, 1,000 miles away, forget it. I wouldn't be here not talking to you.
Right.
I don't know what I'd have done, because I had other things I liked to do, but this is what opened up.
Ry Cooter is my guest today. And in a minute, we'll talk about the trip to Cuba that changed his life. The Buena Vista Social Club coming up in Studio 360 from PRI. Stay with us. This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson, and I'm talking today with the musician and producer Ry Cooter. Buena Vista Social Club and that experience, the record that you produced in Cuba, was a significantly a matter of luck as well.
No? Oh yeah. That was fate taking a hand, and sometimes fate will intervene, and so we found ourselves not doing the thing we set out to do, and instead looking around and saying, you, come over here and turn on the microphones and the tape machine if it works. It didn't always every day. And let's see if we can't, you know, catch a groove in here. And it, since there was this room full of master musicians, we sure as hell caught a groove in there. And fate decreed this. There's no other way to explain, you know.
Right. Caught a groove, and then weirdly and amazingly, it had this huge popular success. How did you feel about that? How did you respond to that?
Well, I had always believed, ever since I was teenage, and I could see that the popular music that you tend to listen to on the radio oftentimes was a
derivative
of those? Yeah. Yeah, a vague mirror image of these core things.
Right.
So I used to think, well, they'd really like Howling Wolf. They think they're... Pardon my saying, the Rolling Stones are good. And yes, it's true, but the Howling Wolf is something else. It changes you. They keep people, you say, oh, Buena Vista Social Club changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the world may not notice. I mean, a bunch of 80-year-old Cubans, they may not particularly care right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the way was open in the public. There was a moment of expansion in public consciousness. That's all I can say. Because you don't order these things, and you don't call up the media and say, get on down.
Yeah. Well, and again, the luck of the timing of a large enough audience at that moment being kind of predisposed to say, yeah, let's listen to music from other places we don't know
right.
about.
That's right. And then, of course, the film, which everybody believes what they see, proved beyond a shadow of doubt that it was true and that these cats were really something. And the story was great. And there you have a perfect example of a wonderful story that everybody took to heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I say, you know, we're all wired for stories.
Yeah. Now, in addition to Cuba, you've worked with artists from Japan, from Mali, all over the world. What got you started in what you've called this treasure hunt for music you like?
Well, when I was a kid, I saw records and I saw what they meant. They were like this little thing when you put the needle down, everything appeared. Everything was possible. It unfolded. It took you somewhere,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Flamenco was the first thing I remember as I must have been 3 years old.
Huh.
It really grabbed me that way.
Uh-huh. Does all that music, getting that into your hands and head, does that mm-hmm. influence the kind of music, for instance, that's on I Flathead, this highly American rootsy music?
Yeah. All music to me is all the same. I do the same things whoever I'm with. There's only so many notes. And when you're talking about guitar, it's a very popular instrument, all right, but it's very limited. So you find ways to shape it. And I'll go here with this guy, but I'll go over here with this guy. I end up doing three different things. I keep doing them.
Now, you have worked with as many musicians as anybody alive, probably. Is there somebody you haven't played with who you're dying to get in a studio with?
Only about 10,000 people. But what are you going to do? You know, most of them have died, I'm sorry to say, and it's true. They keep dying every year. But, you know, we're a long ways down the road. This is 2008 now. We're long ways down the road from the stuff I used to have. And my LPs that I still listen to, you know, long ways down the road. So it's...
You don't feel like you're done. There's still plenty of people you're going to play with over the next few decades.
No, I think I'm done.
Yeah? Okay, good. I'm glad we had this last interview in that case.
No, I'm kidding. I don't know. You never know, because the next day you wake up and say, wait, I got an idea here.
Uh-huh.
Although the world has changed, things that produced social situations, economic conditions, and the world itself produced a certain kind of musician,
mm-hmm.
but they're not producing them anymore. And this is a fact. It sounds harsh, but it's the fact. That's all there is to it.
What is the current economic, social, systemic setup not producing? And why? What kind of musician?
Well, pre-media culture, what is that? That's something basic, you know. That's people who learn from each other or grow up in a tradition. It's conservative because they maintain their tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But once in a while, art grade or artisan grade people emerge.
Mm-hmm.
When you meet that person, what you're doing is you're looking at somebody who created this inside themselves without any need for the critique of the outside world.
Right.
You know, Compay Segundo doesn't need anybody to tell him he's good.
Right.
And he doesn't need anybody to tell him what music is. He just laugh if you do. But these are people who are truly within themselves. Their only expression is this sound that they know how to make, you know?
Right.
Somebody might say, well, you're talking about poverty then. You're talking about backwards.
Not necessarily, though, right?
But not necessarily. Some people have said, oh, you're just a fan of poverty. I said, no. I like music that comes from this place. Because I feel it and I like it and it makes me feel good and then I want to do it.
It's like music that comes from maybe an indigenous culture of some kind, but also from the kind of the amateur spirit of just wanting to do it because it's fun to play and fun to hear rather than maybe I can get rich.
The amateur spirit. I love that phrase. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to use that. So I have a hard time sometimes figuring out what this really is all about, but the amateur spirit... And again, the do-it-yourself spirit, if you like, the tinkering spirit, seems to be all connected somehow.
Well, there you go. Rye Cooter, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rye Cooter's new album is called I Flathead, and you can hear a track from it at studio360.org. Well, maybe you